Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I know I'm a strange face. I get this all the time. It's good to see you. Great to see all of you in the room. Welcome, folks watching from the East, Fountain Springs East, and online. We're glad you're with us. We're talking about something that's part of a series, Building Your Home on a Firm Foundation. And I'm going to call the talk that I'm giving as part of this series, Helping the Next Gen Win. I'm fully aware that not all of you listening to me are parents or whatever. You may not be raising kids in your home. Maybe they're out of the house. Maybe you never were a parent. But you're probably an aunt or an uncle, a coach, a teacher. One thing I know we all have in common, we all care about the future, don't we? There wouldn't be a person in the room that doesn't care about the future. You wouldn't be here unless you care about the future. Well, can I say something that's probably obvious? The kids are the future. So I'm hoping that you care about what we talk about today, if for no other reason, they're the people that are going to be leading us in 20 years. So helping the next gen win. I thought it might be fun to start with a little bit of an activity. Is that okay with you? I thought I would give you a pop quiz to see how well you know the next generation. Doesn't that sound really cool? So here's what I want to do. You know they're on TikTok, right? If you're middle school, high school, whatever, you're often on TikTok. So behind me are several terms off to the left that kids would be using in Generation Z, okay? You're going to have 30 seconds, not 1 minute. I think you're smart people. You only need 30 seconds to decipher these terms, okay? So get on your marks, get set, go. Okay, so sorry, folks. Put your number two pencils down. Okay, I'm going to let you grade your own papers, but I'm going to walk through these one by one, and you can just see how well you did, how hip and cool you really are, okay? Okay, so what's take several seats mean, all right? It means you want somebody to calm down. Calm down. And by the way, isn't everything today hyperbole? So you don't just take a seat. You take several seats, okay? We send text messages with all caps and 4 exclamation points on them. Okay, no cap. Means you're not lying or exaggerating, okay? Funny story, I have a principal who's a friend of mine who said he was talking to one of the seniors in high school in the hallway, and the senior said, dude, calls the principal, dude, I got a 1.5 GPA. The principal said, you're kidding me. The kid said, no cap. My friend said, no gown either, buddy. I thought that was very timely, very timely. Bop. Bop, of course, means it describes a song you think is really good. Okay, that would be an adjective you would use. Okay, left no crumbs. Anybody know what that means? It means you did a really good job. You left no crumbs. Okay. Stan. You know what stan means, don't you? It means you're a huge fan of someone famous. So just so you'll know, it's actually a cross between stalker and fan. I'm not a stalker, but I'm more than a fan. I'm a stan, okay? Living rent-free. You know what that means, don't you? It means you can't stop thinking about something. You may say, that song is living rent-free in my head, okay? So if your kid says that, you go, yeah, I know what you mean. Hundo P. Hundo P means short for 100%, okay? Short for 100%. All right, last one. Talk to me. Did anybody know what drip means? Okay, good. Yeah, a few of you do. It's a cooler, trendy sense of style. Is anybody in this room as old as I am when the term drip was a derogatory term? Anybody remember this? You'd say, you're such a drip. No, I'm not. You know, and of course now you say, yeah, cool, trendy. Got it. Okay, anybody in the room get every one of them right? We have some work to do. Anybody raise your hand and say, I have no idea what we just did the last 30 seconds of the service, okay? Okay. So what I'm about to share with you over the next 30 minutes or so is from a book I did recently called Generation Z Unfiltered. You know the millennials are no longer the new kids on the block, right? They're already all young professionals. Gen Z would be the kids in middle school, high school, college, and young professionals. And then behind Gen Z are younger children called the Alpha Generation. So there's a couple of generation of kids still in K-12. And I just want to help you today. I'm not a guru or a sage. I want to help you understand them better. Empathize better so you can lead them better, connect with them better. Sound like a good goal? Yeah. 3 of you, good enough for me. Okay. So let me start with a couple of stories. I think these stories are really a good case study to lay the foundation for where we need to go this morning in this session. So two stories, two kids. The first one is about a young man named Virgil. A few years ago, Virgil was in the eighth grade. He was 13 years old. At about 2 o'clock in the morning one night, he's playing video games with his friend Kashan. This is what eighth graders do. As they're playing this video game, they're not together, but they're in the same complex. You know, they each got their own living room that they're playing in. Both boys at the same moment hear this loud noise outside their window. And both boys scampered to the front window to see what it was. And both boys noticed that there was a storm coming in. But they both assumed, it's not that bad. Well, they were wrong. Anybody remember Hurricane Harvey sweeping through the Houston area? Well, they were in Dickinson, Texas, right outside of Houston. Before he knew it, young Virgil, eighth grade, had water up to his knees. His apartment was flooding. But I love how Virgil responded. He didn't wait for a grown-up to do something. Didn't wait for permission from an adult to do something. Virgil grabbed his phone, grabbed his mother, and then his older sister, and he ran them upstairs to the second floor of the apartment complex to get away from the rising waters. Now, I don't know about you, but to me, that's an act of heroism for an eighth grader. But it didn't stop there. When they get up top to the second floor, Virgil gets a call from Kashan, this friend he's playing video games with. And Kashan says, "Virg, we need help over here. We're drowning. We need help." Well, once again, Virgil springs into action. Doesn't wait for his mother to do something. Doesn't wait for permission from his mother to do something. Virgil runs right back downstairs to his own flooding apartment, grabs an air mattress that he slept on at night, and uses it as a raft. He paddles over to Kashan's apartment and saves his friend and their family as he's paddling back and forth. And that in itself would be an act of heroism, but it didn't stop there. True story. As he's paddling back and forth, you can imagine he hears the cries for help from other people in the apartment complex. Other families are needing help. Virgil spent hours that night paddling back and forth to help people. According to the police report the next morning, true story, Virgil Smith saved 17 lives that night in Hurricane Harvey. The police and the mayor gave him a big award for being a brave leader, and his mother was praised for raising such a fine, brave young man. Isn't that cool? By the way, don't you love stories like that? Wish there were 1,000 others. That's one story. There's another one, though, that I want to share that might be more familiar to you. The young lady, teenager behind me, is a gal named Haley. Haley's still with us, but it's a bit of a miracle. Haley was growing up in a middle-class home in a kind of a middle-class town. She was sophomore year of high school, beautiful young lady, going to church, posting on Instagram. And if you would looked at her post on Instagram, you would have thought, happiest girl in the world. Until one night, her parents walked into her bedroom and they found her on the floor. Haley had attempted to complete suicide. They had no idea. They rushed her into the ER and they saved her life, thankfully. But again, everyone the next day expressed their shock that they would have never guessed that this well-adjusted, church-going, good grade-making, Instagram-posting girl was struggling with angst. Anxiety, panic attacks, depression. I don't know if you know this, but this is quite normalized these days. These are not bad kids in poor parts of town. It's everyday kids that are somehow struggling with mental health. So I share these two stories with you only as a foundation. I think they represent pictures on the spectrum of Generation Z. Virgil on one side, high sense of agency. Haley on the other side, high sense of anxiety. And really, I think they are pictures that give us a little bit of a peek into the world Gen Z. These two paradoxical, oxymoronic traits are the reality. In fact, if you and I just had a couple of minutes alone together and you said, "Tell me what I ought to know," and I only got 2 minutes, it'd be this. Generation Z's world is marked by a high sense of agency, meaning I feel very empowered. Think Virgil. I got this. I got a smartphone in my hand. I know what to do. But then at the same time, a high sense of anxiety. Think Haley. So one is screaming to us, "I don't need your help." The other is screaming, "I desperately need your help." And on any given day, if you're a parent of a teen, you're going to think, "I don't know who I got here. Do you need my help? Do you not?" Both. And one of the reasons we're wrestling with this issue today in culture, they're not bad kids, they're not wicked kids, they're not evil, they're not dumb, they're smart kids, but they're growing up in a very different day than the one I grew up in. Would anybody agree with that? It's just a funky day. Both of these realities were deepened by the smartphone. I don't think the smartphone is wicked in itself, but I think we were ambushed. We did not know what an overwhelming amount of messaging coming at us all the time would do to our sense of overwhelmness, our sense of, I got this, fake news, real news, too much news. So this is the backdrop with which I want to start. I'd like to divide my time with you today into two parts. In fact, can I just say this? Today's gonna feel like a doctor's appointment, okay? We're gonna do a diagnosis and a prescription. So stay with me. I'm gonna take a few minutes to diagnose what's culture doing today? What are kids turning out to be? What's their world marked by? But then, stay for the end, I'm gonna give you some strategies that I think are gonna help you better connect with the next gen. Again, whether you're an uncle or aunt, coach, teacher, mom or dad, I'm hoping this becomes very, very practical for you and biblical for you. All right, so who are these new kids on the block? So in the Generation Z book that I mentioned earlier, I put a two-page centerfold of the generations. It's a chart where I list the six generations that will be showing up from day to day in your life. In fact, my guess is probably in this church, all six generations exist. Let me stop and say this. Are you all aware that for the first time in modern history, there are seven distinct sociological generations still alive right now? Because people are living longer, and because mamas are still having babies, we have seven. My Uncle Gene and Aunt Wanda are in their 90s. Uncle Gene is 99 years old. Next month, he turns 100. Still driving a motorhome on I-5 in San Diego. It scares the bejeebies out of me. Get him off the road. He's a piece of history, I'm telling you. Okay, so here's what I want to do. I want you just to take a gander at each of these generations and how the elements of the world were shaping them as they grew up, and it might explain why we're a little different, okay? So very quickly, the oldest generation that I want to talk about today would be the builder generation, born 1929 and 1945. You would agree? That's the older generation, okay? They were called builders because they built so much out of so little. Look at the years they grew up. After the builders come the baby boomers. They were born between 1946 and 1964. They were called boomers because right after World War II, for the next 18 years, there was a boom of babies. Okay, 76.4 million kids, and that had never happened in America before. And then come the baby busters, or Generation X, basically late 80s all the way through the 70s. Gen X is the title, Xers in the room, that you wanted, because your generation said, we don't want to be called anything, call us the X generation. But the first title you were given by social scientists was baby buster, and do you know why? Because the first year of your generation's existence was the public introduction of the birth control pill. So instead of a boom, it was a bust. Yeah. I mean, birth rates dropped dramatically. In fact, if you add on top of that, look at those years. If you add on top of that Roe v. Wade in 1973, you have a shrinking population, not a booming population. That affected America's tone, economics, enrollment, employment. It was just a shifting pendulum, okay? After the busters, or Gen X, comes Gen Y, or the millennials. These are basically people born in the 80s and 90s. Both of my kids are millennial generation kids. And then after Gen Y comes Gen Z, basically these are the kids that have only known and remembered the 21st century. If you talk about the 90s, they go, that's history. You know, Abe Lincoln, JFK, and the 90s, you know? I mean, that's kind of how it is. And then the youngest children we're just now beginning to measure and collect data on would be the alpha generation. So after Gen Y, Gen Z comes Gen Alpha, because we're back at the beginning of the alphabet again. But they're basically the kids who've grown up over the last 6-7 years, and they're still taking shape, okay? Now, I'm moving quick, but I'm doing it on purpose. All I want to do is give you a great sense of understanding and empathy as you connect with different generations. My goal today is not to stereotype, but to understand. Can I say that again? My goal today is not to stereotype, but to understand. And maybe as you lead a teenager that where you're getting frustrated because you just don't understand this teenager. By the way, you do know people said that about you when you were a teen. You do know that, don't you? Back since Socrates, we've been saying, kids today, you know? Socrates even said that thousands of years ago. So let's walk through and let's talk a little bit about the life paradigm or the narrative each generation brings with them as they move from childhood to adulthood. Or as I like to say, from backpack to briefcase. What's the narrative they bring with them? So go back in time, almost 100 years, the builder generation. As I interviewed builder generation folks in retirement villages, we had a blast, but here's what I came away with. Their life paradigm, when they started their career, just be grateful you got a job. Somebody talk to me, why would I assign that one to this generation? Yeah, the Great Depression. My dad's a perfect example. My dad was born in 1930. So the first decade of his life was the Great Depression. The next 5 years, World War II. He just passed away in 2020 at 90 years old. I can't tell how many times he said, be grateful you have a job. I said, Dad, I started the company. Well, just be grateful you have that job. Yes, sir, okay? By the way, you remember this generation? Frugal, conservative, save the wrapping paper at Christmas, we'll use it next year. Remember this? Okay. All right. Baby boomers, you're now kind of retiring at 10,000 a day on average, but I gave us boomers, I'm one of them, the life paradigm, I want better. Because it was a time of expansion, not depression. It was post-World War II. We just won a big war. Shopping malls were popping up. McDonald's was franchising. We felt large and in charge. Xers come along. After baby boomers come baby busters. Xers, you're going to love this in the room. I gave the Xers, after talking to them, I laughed hard because we just identified so much. But I gave you the life paradigm. Keep it real. Keep it real. Don't tell me life is wonderful. Keep it real. This was the first generation that was demanding authenticity. You seem like everything was plastic before you. So look at the years you grew up. By the late 60s, mishandling of so many things was going on. LBJ said, everything's fine over there in Vietnam, but we were watching the news and we were seeing footage that said, it's not fine over there. Then you had the Watergate scandal. Now you had a Democrat and a Republican both lying from the White House. Then you had the OPEC gas crisis. Anybody remember standing in line to get gas? It was just a weird time. So Xers, you were growing up then, but you were being led by a generation that was a little more skeptical at this point. You grew up a little more skeptical yourself, a little more jaded as a generation. Millennials come along. Millennials, please forgive us. We've been throwing you under the bus for 15 years. I ask your forgiveness. But millennials, I gave you the life paradigm. I've loved talking to the millennials. But here's the life paradigm I think you carried with you as you entered your career. Life is a cafeteria. Now, let me explain. My two kids are perfect examples. So just like you go to a cafeteria and you grab a tray and a plate and you go down the line and you make up your meal, right? Tailored for your taste buds. A little bit of roast beef, a little bit of mashed potatoes. Love that Jell-O. Give me some pudding, you know, and you make up your meal. These young professionals are making almost every major decision of their life as if it were a buffet. Has nothing to do with rich or poor. In fact, millennials grew up in a time of digital customization. As they grew up, the computer grew up. As they grew up, the cell phone grew up. So here's some examples. My two kids, they're both in their 30s now. Perfect examples. Years ago, my two kids stopped buying compact discs to get their music. Why would they buy a CD? There might be six songs I don't even like on that CD. I get one song at a time from my own playlist on Apple Music, Spotify. It's a buffet. They'll make educational decisions this way. They'll graduate high school and go to two or three different colleges for one degree. One of them's overseas. And you know this now, don't you, today? You can just make up a major. Just make it up, you know? We just want your money. Just make it up and come on, you know? Isn't it true? And you're paying out of the nose for this. By the way, they'll make spiritual decisions this way. A little bit of Jesus, a little bit of Buddha, a little bit of Eastern mysticism, a little bit of Oprah, shake it together. I got my faith, you know? There's no one true source, but this God really likes me. So all I'm saying is, it's almost like a free agent mindset. Employers in the room, you know this, don't you? You're interviewing people and they're quite audacious in what they're asking for. Now, it's just, it's a new day. It's a new day and a new buffet. Now, see what I did there? Okay. Okay, for Gen Z, I gotta tell you, I love this generation of kids. I spoke to middle schoolers, high schoolers, college students, and young professionals. And every one of the conversations in these focus groups was so, they were so respectful, they really were, but they were candid. And the phrase I took away after talking to loads of them was this: I'm coping and hoping. Now let me explain. They're still hopeful in many ways because they're young, and you're kind of hopeful when you're young. I'm going to major in this and do this. But many of them just feel like they're coping with life right now. Mental health issues are a thing. And when I say coping, I don't mean coping skills. We all need coping skills. Life's hard, right? It was coping mechanisms. Like a teenage guy might go, I just have to binge on video games for 6 hours a day. It's the only way I can make it through the day. So this is just coping with uncertainty, with a crazy world, with, pardon me, they feel like a group of leaders in D.C. that don't know what the heck they're doing. It feels that way, doesn't it, sometimes? I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I put myself in a 16-year-old's shoes and I go, yeah. I mean, it feels like the average age there is 80. I'm not being unkind, but do you not agree? It's like, when are you going to step aside and let a 50-year-old come in? So their view is just informed by this. I'm coping and hoping. Now, of course, we don't know alpha gen narrative yet, although some of you are raising two-year-olds, you go, I can tell you what it is right now already. Okay, let's do one more real fast. I know I'm taking too much time on this, but it's so much fun to kind of compare and contrast. Anybody want to talk about this category? Attitude toward authority. Anybody think that might have changed in 100 years? Okay, so let's go. So as I talked to representatives from each one, for the builder generation, it was respect them, right? I was taught that by my mom and dad. For the boomers, it was replace them. We just thought we would take over. Thank you very much. And we will not leave Washington, D.C. No, no. Okay? For Xers, it's endure them. We got to put up with these knuckleheads. Let's go get a Starbucks. For the millennials, it's choose them. Because remember, life's the cafeteria. So here's an example of this. 15 years ago, 2008, I was on the campus of University of Georgia talking to undergrads. And we were talking about this topic of mentoring with these college students. And it was very common for me to hear them say to me, well, yes, he's my professor, but he's not my mentor. And what they meant by that is, I have to take this class, but I'm choosing the people that I'm let pour into me. See that sense of agency? I'm in control. Life's a buffet. For Gen Z, again, very respectful, but very candid, because this generation of kids didn't grow up with just a cell phone. They grew up with a smartphone, which I believe was a game changer. You know the feeling I got from them? Not sure I need them. Now, you and I both know they do need you, but there's a sense. Well, let me give you an illustration. I just, not very long ago, talked to a high school senior who said, my teachers are obsolete. And he wasn't being cruel. He was being factual. I can look up everything they say in the classroom. Tell me something I can't look up. So teachers, your role is changing. They don't need you for information. They need you for interpretation. It's a new day. Now, for Gen Alpha, I talked to some children, which was really fun, but mostly I talked to parents. I talked to elementary school teachers. And do you know what I feel like is coming as they grow older? Question everything. They've had a tablet since they were 4 years old, so watch out, fasten your seatbelts, hang on, okay? Now, all I wanted you to see was, can you see how we were shaped a little bit differently in different times? People develop like wet cement. You know how you can press your hand into wet cement on a sidewalk day one and leave it there, but you try to do that year one? You can't press your hand in that sidewalk. In fact, it takes a jackhammer to change it, right? Our neural pathways are very plastic. In the early 25 years of our life, the plasticity is high, the flexibility, the adaptability. It's when you're learning a bunch. Later, the neural pathways are not as plastic. And just like it takes a jackhammer to change the sidewalk after a year or two, for some of you to change your mind, it might take a jackhammer to change your mind. Anybody feel like you've made up your mind on a couple things and I'm not gonna change it, you know? Okay, so looking at this chart, I just have one simple question for you. Here it is. Do you feel the disconnect between the generations? Do you feel that disconnect? So let me give you just a word of encouragement. If you and I were to hop on a jet and we were to fly across the world to another country, let's say China, okay? As we got off that jet at the airport in Beijing, wouldn't you naturally be psyched up to work harder to connect with people there? Because you would know, oh my gosh, we're different, right? They speak a different language here. they have different customs here. They probably have different values here. Bingo. When I, in my age, talk to a Gen Zer at 15, 16 years old, I know I got to work harder to connect with them. Different language. Remember the game we just played? Different values, different customs. So all I'm saying is, what do we do in a foreign land? We work harder to connect with people. Are you willing to put in the work? Or are you building walls instead of bridges? Is there a way? This is a question, I mean it. Is there a way to turn our frustration with the younger generations into fascination? You know, they have a lot to teach us. You know that, don't you? They know stuff about apps that we could monetize at the company or we could find useful. And oh my gosh, all I'm saying is, could we turn our frustration into fascination? If we're going to do what we just sung about before I hopped up, to every generation, sons and daughters, we got to work to connect with them. The leader needs to lean in to connect with the follower, not the other way around. Okay, enough said. So I want to look at a passage of Scripture real quick. Actually, two of them very fast. But I want you to listen closely. This next passage I'm going to share with you has become my favorite passage in the Old Testament. It's going to be strange because it's not a Psalm or Genesis. It's 1 Chronicles. I know, I'm weird. But you know in the book of 1 Chronicles, the writer is chronicling the tribes and clans of Israel. And he's talking in chapter 12 about the contribution that each tribe in Israel made to the nation. They were all different. Look what he says about the tribe of Issachar. Look at this. He says in 1 Chronicles 12:32, and the sons of Issachar were men who, what are those next three words? Say them out loud. Understood the times. In other words, when we look around us in our culture today, and we don't know what's going on, we can't make heads or tails of it. These people seem to understand the times. They seem to get what's going on. And I love the fact that he didn't stop there. He goes on to say, with the knowledge of what the people of Israel should do. I literally prayed this prior to this service. God, help us understand the times. Help us be wise moms and dads. Not old idiots that don't want to tell kids line up or whatever. People that understand the times and have the insight to know how to lead them, to connect with them. That's my goal. So let me take a couple minutes in case this has felt like Debbie Downer. Let me give you the upside of Gen Z. There's a lot of upsides. In fact, there's a lot of places where the 59 million Gen Z members remind me a lot of Jesus. I'm going to repeat that. There's a lot of ways Gen Z reminds me of Jesus. Check this out. Did you know that the focus of this particular generation, with some exceptions, is social justice for the marginalized? If you know anything, if you're anywhere on social media, you understand this. Gen Z has a real passion and heartbeat for anybody that feels marginalized, whether that's a race thing or whether that's climate change or whatever. There's a truckload of issues, and they tend to lean that way. There's exceptions, but of the 59 million, that's their heartbeat. Can I ask you a question? When you read the Gospels, don't you see Jesus having a heart for the marginalized? He's seeking out tax collectors and prostitutes and spending time with them. They were on the outskirts, the fringes. He didn't just talk to rich white folk. You know that, don't you? Come on. Okay, number two. They show high levels of compassion. So when you look at the data set for Gen Z and the Alpha generation for that matter, they're up and down with empathy, but there's a growing pattern worldwide toward compassion. And my theory on that is, I think because they're exposed to so many problems all around the world very rapidly, they start feeling compassionate about these problems that need to be solved and these people that need to be served. I don't know about you, but when I was in middle school, I think my biggest problem was, where's my baseball mitt and how do I find a girlfriend? You know, that was it, baby. That's as hard as it got. Today, a middle schooler on social media, they know about Hamas and Israel and the war that's going on. They know about the Ukraine thing that doesn't seem to end. They know about the mass shooting in Maine. They know at 13, they're very aware. So when do they feel overwhelmed by their teenage years? The third item I want you to get is this. They have a high interest in entrepreneurship. Did you know this? Nationwide in the U.S., 72% of high school students want to be an entrepreneur. Meaning, I'd rather start something than join something. So I want them to join some stuff, but if they join, you probably need to create a sense of entrepreneurship. Is there anything that they could help pioneer at the organization or in the family? That's the sense they have. And no doubt, they've watched Shark Tank. Okay, one more. This is really cool to me because of my interest. Gen Z has a keener interest in leadership globally than the previous three generations at their age. Isn't that cool? So one more passage. You know that throughout the Old Testament, and particularly in the Psalms, God doesn't just request we care about the next generation, he's commanding it. In Psalm 78, verse 6, look what he said. So the next generation would know, even the children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children. This is what God's obsessed with. Loving you, saving you, but then making sure that you get his heartbeat for what's behind you. Are you hearing what I'm saying? I think I'm preaching the choir. I think you get this. But one of the things that Pastor Chris wanted to establish today is let's get consumed, not only with our own well-being and paying the bills, but we're looking backward at those kiddos and saying, how are we creating an environment for them to naturally find a relationship with Jesus, to naturally see the truth, and to want to serve as well? Not just the graduated. Thank God they graduated. Okay, enough said. So how do we lead them? Let me do one more slide, and I'm going to sit down. Let's go back to our imaginary Starbucks. Let's say you and I went to Starbucks, and you said, Tim, I just have a few minutes. What would you suggest I do to try to connect with this next generation, okay? These would be the shifts that I would recommend that we make. These are shifts that I have tried to make over the last 5 to 7 years, all right? Number one, they're all simple. Number one, don't think control, think connect. Don't think control, think connect. Are you like me in your home? If the kids are going crazy and things seem to be out of control and they've gone awry, I just want to seize control. Just get out of the way. I'm going to take over here. You know, I'm a father, you know, that sort of thing. Can I tell you something? Control is a myth. Y'all see it's a myth, isn't it? Okay. Nobody is in control. He's in control. None of us are in control. So instead of seeking something that I really will never have, here's what I found out was better. To seek connection. So I can't control that teenager's attitude, but I can connect with them at the heart level. Meaning, an arm around the shoulder where I'm saying, tell me what's going on. I know you're hurting right now, or I know something's not going right. Talk to me. And even though I don't ever gain control, I gain a deep sense of influence. Don't think control, think connect. Number two, don't think inform, think interpret. Remember I said earlier today, they don't need you for information. They need you for interpretation. Let me help you make sense of all that you know. Let me give context to the content you've consumed on YouTube or TikTok or whatever. So they need us to help shape their worldview. We don't need to tell them what to think. We need to tell them how to think. Can I get an amen from the choir on that one? We need to teach them how to think. Here's another one. Number three, don't think rules, think equations. So by the time our kids were like 7 and 11, we kind of did away with a bunch of rules. We had a bunch of rules. My wife is very much a perfectionist. We had a lot of rules. I decided, and we decided then, we need to do away with a bunch of rules. We had 3 rules in our house. And one of them was respect your mom. That was a big one. But you know what? We had a ton of equations. Do you know what an equation is? You live by them all the time. An equation is if you do this, that is the benefit. If you do that, this is the consequence. Isn't life full of these? If you don't believe me, try not paying your mortgage this month. It's an equation. Yeah. The bank's going to send you a piece of paper with more numbers on it. They're not going to yell at you, just more to pay. I wanted to condition my kids. Life is full of equations, and you have a consequence or a benefit to every single decision you make. And sometimes I'd say, oh, Bethany, bad equation. Give me your phone. And they began to see every time I make a choice, there's an outcome, good or bad. It's my call. Number four, don't think lecture, think lab. If you went to college, do you remember science class had 2 parts? There was the lecture and then the what? The lab. Now, the lecture was kind of the boring part. Remember, there was a PhD in front going blah, 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 blah from the textbook. But the lab, ooh, that's kind of cool. You got to go into a big room with Bunsen burners and test tubes, and you blew things up in there. The lab was where you got to do what the lecture was. I think we have a ton of lectures in our homes. I don't know about you. I had a lot of lectures. I tossed a bunch, and I thought, I want to create labs, which were safe places to experiment in, to experiment in this or serving people. We'd go down and feed the homeless pretty regularly when my kids were going. I wanted them to learn to serve people that didn't have what we had. That's simple, but it was a lab. It wasn't like, now, you know what, servant leadership is what we need to do here. I didn't do that. I stopped doing that. Let's create labs. What if you could create experiences and environments from which you dialogue, but it's an experience they're learning from? How about this one? Don't think, tell, think, ask. So I have concluded, this is just me, but I've got a microphone. When your kids, that was a joke. Did you catch that joke? You didn't catch the joke. When my kids were younger, I realized we need to tell them lots of things, right? You do. When they're young, they need to be told. Don't touch the hot stove, okay? As they grow older, into middle school and high school, into adolescence, I found it was much better to lead with questions. Why did you do that? What was in your mind to make you do that? And you saw what happened. Why do you think that? I'm telling you, I learned this from Jesus. If you read the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you see not only a great Savior, you see a great leader who led most of the time with questions. It's so interesting. Here's another one. Don't think prescriptive, think descriptive. So for some reason, this generation of moms and dads, the last 20 years, have become very prescriptive in our leadership. We're prescribing every step of the way. After all, we know how to score a good SAT score. We know how to graduate. We know how to get into a college. We know how to get a scholarship. So we're prescribing every step of the way. Don't forget your backpack. Don't forget the quiz on Friday. Don't forget grandma's birthday next Wednesday. Don't forget. And you know what we basically condition them to do, mamas? Lean on mama. She'll tell me. When we lead descriptively, we're not prescribing every step of the way. We're describing a goal together that they want to reach, and then you're nudging them. What steps you think you need to take to get to that goal? I don't know. Well, think about it. I'll be a guide, but not a God. And we begin to teach them to think through the strategies and steps to reach a goal. We've not done that well. Maybe South Dakota's different. The other 49 say, we're not doing good on this. And they're graduating very unready for a career. I have lost count of the number of university deans that have said to me, 26 is the new 18. You follow that? What we once expected at 18, you're a man now, let's take responsibility. It's now happening maybe at 26. Now, that's just them, but I'm saying there might be a kernel of truth there. All right, let's keep going. Don't think what, think why. So typically we want to tell them what to do or whatever. I found it was very, very keen and helpful as my kids were growing older, 11, 12, 13, 14, to say, let me tell you the why behind what I'm asking you to do. And once I explained the why, they got used to the fact that dad almost always has a reason why. So they were going with me quicker on this without requiring a long talk because they knew he's got a why. The last one I want to give you is one I want to close with. Don't think manage, think mentor. Teachers in the room, teachers online, teachers at the East Fountain Springs, we think management a lot. In fact, don't we even use a term in education? Classroom management. And I say that like that because I got to tell you, I've never met one kid that walked up and said, would you manage me? Just manage me, would you? I've never met a kid say, have you? Now listen, I have met plenty of kids that would say, I'm sure looking for a mentor. I could stand to be coached a little bit. I don't even know how to apply for college, or I don't even know how to do that trade or that skill or whatever. If we'll put the mentor hat on instead of the dad hat or the teacher hat or the coach hat, I'm going to mentor these kids. I'm going to teach life skills, not just a skill. So I want to close with a quick story. When both of my kids were 13, my wife and I created a rite of passage experience for them, kind of like a bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah, but for us. And we began to usher them into the responsibilities of adulthood, not overnight, but over time. But when they were 12, the year before, I let them pick a trip. They could go anywhere they wanted to go, and I would take a daddy-daughter trip with my daughter or a daddy-son trip with my son, Jonathan. Well, when my son turned 12, I said to him, remember what I did with Bethany 4 years ago? Okay, so you can pick anywhere in the world you want to go. And then I caught myself. I just said anywhere in the world. Did I mean that? He could pick Tokyo, Japan, you know, or Moscow, Russia, or whatever. Thankfully, he knew nothing of Moscow and Tokyo. He picked Minneapolis, Minnesota. Yes, he did. That's what he did. Now, let me tell you what his reasoning was. I said, why there? He goes, well, the Mall of America's there, you know. And if you remember back in the day, they had Camp Snoopy and roller coaster. They still have a roller coaster there. So he wanted to ride the roller coasters in the shopping mall. That's cool. And then he's a thespian. He knew there was a show going on in Minneapolis where he knew the director and he wanted to watch the show. So dad and son flew up, and Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we did hilarious, fun things. We had pillow fights in the hotel and ate junk food and rode roller coasters and did things we never told Mama about. But on Monday, he knew that was the day we're going to have a conversation. In fact, he had fear and trepidation. Dad, what are we going to talk about? Just relax. But he knew we're going to talk about life. So on Monday, I said, Jonathan, we're not going to ride a roller coaster. Hop in the car. We had a rental car. We drove up to one of the 10,000 lakes up there in the Minneapolis area. And I found a little parking lot right next to the water. And I pulled in. And I looked at my son and I said, Jonathan, I'm going to do something strange now. I want to trade places with you. What do you mean? I said, I'm going to get out of the car and go around to the passenger side. You're going to hop around to the driver's side and you're going to drive this car. Well, you would have thought I told him to rob a bank. Dad, that is illegal. That is illegal. That's illegal. He's a rule keeper. I said, Jonathan, we're not going to go out in the main roads. We're just going to stay right here. And there's nobody else here. I want to see if you can handle this machine. Next thing he said, I'm not kidding. He goes, Dad, Mom will not like this. Mom will not like this. I said, Jonathan, come on. Well, I talked him into it. 10 minutes later, he finally got in the car. And then, you know how kids learn just in time, not just in case? So he's ready to learn about the steering wheel, the accelerator, the brake, the gear shift, the ignition. I gave him a real quick training time, and then he turned the engine on. Men in the room, remember the first time you turned the car on? Yeah. That's awesome, you know. Well, next thing I know, he's backing up, and he's doing just fine. He didn't know what he was doing, but I would say 5 minutes in, he's doing everything he's seen me do. He's doing, you know, doing this to the steering wheel, you know, this diagonal parking and parallel parking and zipping through the, coming to a screeching halt as fast as he could. He was having a blast. So after about 15 minutes or so, I said, all right, stop the car. We're trading places again. And that's when we had the coolest conversation. And here's how it went. I said, Jonathan, this is going to feel really cheesy, but just go with me on this. How did you feel when you first got behind the wheel of this car? He was honest. He said, Dad, I panicked. I didn't think I could do it. What did you just show me? I guess I showed you I could do it. I said, Jonathan, that's exactly the feeling you're going to have. Becoming a man. You're going to feel like, I don't know what I'm doing. None of us do, Jonathan. You have to find your way into adulthood. But I said, Jonathan, you just showed me at 12, you could handle a big machine like this. It's in you. God put it in you. And then I began to explain over the next several years, he needed to be a driver, not a passenger, as his body would be changing over the next several years. His view of girls would be changing over the next few years. His view of his parents would be changing. Isn't that true? But we began to talk about these changes. And I said, the key, Jonathan, is to be a driver, not a passenger in life, where you're just along for the ride and you're blaming somebody else when you didn't get to the location you wanted to get to. Drive your life. And then I said one more thing. I said, Jonathan, I have one more question. This one took a little time, but I said, what else did you know about this situation today that made you say, I think I can do this? He thought for a minute, and then he said, well, I knew you were right there. I said, exactly. And in life, your Heavenly Father, He's right there. You're not ever really alone. We've referred back to that 12-year-old conversation many times. He's 31 now. But we go back to, are you going to own your life? Or are you going to let somebody else? You going to want mama to do this? You want to do this? It's far better to prepare kids to own it. So I want to pray with you. Before I pray, though, I just want to say this. Pastor Chris, we talked before this day came along. We're going to have a parent workshop a little bit later. Come if you want to. Come if you can. But out in the lobby of the church, there are some resources that are available. You don't have to get them, but I've got Gen Z Unfiltered out there if you want to get that copy. The I Can't Wait book that's coming out this Thursday. It's 52 stories of kids who changed their world that you can read together one a week for a whole year just to cast vision to your kids about not just vegging, but doing something amazing. There's a Habitude book out there that was dinner conversations for us for 13 weeks in a row. And then there's the book called 12 Huge Mistakes Parents Can Avoid. It's what we're going to talk about tonight. And if you want to get the book, you can. All right, let's pray. Father, thank you for giving us a chance to meet together to talk about one of the most important topics on the planet, reaching back to the next generation and helping. I'm asking God that you would help us now retain what we need to retain and then to practice what we need to practice. I ask all of this in Jesus' name. And the people of God said, amen.